Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday. It's June 20th, and it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And I'm always thrilled on Mondays to start the week because it starts off with none other than John Bailey, who's a Wide Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. So good morning, John. What a pleasure to have you on today.
Good morning, Hezzy. 64 and sunny on the Eastern Seaboard.
A good number, actually, because I hear they're sweltering in Europe. And so I hope we don't get that heat here in the United States, because I thought that we were sending over the heat there. And I think they're going to have to go through the process over there, because I don't want to deal with it over here.
Really exhausting. Heating is dangerous. The amount of heat they're getting out in the Midwest and down in Texas.
Absolutely.
It has to be coming here, right? But
it's
it was
going
so
to be
cool
here
yesterday
one
afternoon.
Other.
We didn't eat outside.
Yeah,
Father's Day, my daughter was here, and I couldn't help but thinking what her future is going to be in the country that keeps ignoring reality.
But which reality are you talking about, John?
There are a lot
Father's
of
Day?
Realities
There's
that
lot.
People refuse to pay attention to. Number one, there was an article today about how the nine justices in the Supreme Court are posed to rule on whether or not the U.S. government can regulate business, i.e. the EPA. EPA emasculating the EPA. And this is really dangerous. This has nothing to do with religion. It all has to do with the robber barons of today, the oil company owners who sell us out for Arabian oil, the coal operators who threaten the planet, the entire planet, with their continuing insistence on being able to burn coal to make electricity, and this is wrong. And
well,
the justices, where are those roads to right wrongs? Yeah.
Well, it is interesting that it elevated all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what right do they have to get involved in that? I had no idea that they would be. And what rationale do they base it on?
Because the six that were appointed by the Trump administration, basically given largesse by the Democrats, and now they are supposedly going to do what their sponsors wanted. And this will be a shame, because it used to be you couldn't buy the Supreme Court, but now you can.
Yeah, it seems that they're too much politically involved, especially, what's his name? This woman who's a very
Thomas,
conservative.
Thomas, Mr. Judge, Justice Thomas's wife.
She's part of the insurrection that took place. She's protecting Trump, and she thought everything was right, and she's undermining his position as a Supreme Court justice. I don't know why he doesn't resign. Who the hell is he? You can't tell me that his wife is forcing
him to do one thing or the
other.
What would he do for a living? He certainly couldn't be a judge. What would he do for a living?
That's not my problem, is it?
Certainly couldn't be a judge, right?
Well, that's not my problem if he can't be a judge.
No.
It's very sad, because I thought they were not supposed to be.
He could be a commentator on Fox. There he is. He will make more money doing it.
Good for him.
Yes.
Well, I just can't. I don't tune into Fox News, so I hope he has a good time over there. The faster he gets off the bench, the better. Because these people are sold, bought and sold by their own family. I mean, the audacity of his wife to even be involved while he, while she knows he's sitting on the court. I mean, isn't there a sensibility to this? You know, aren't there?
Well, they do not have any sense of propriety.
Propriety, yeah.
Yeah. They do not understand what is right. They do not understand that just because you want something one way, you have to think of the effects on others. I have been reading so much frightening columns about women who needed abortions and couldn't get them, and the extent to which they had to go to get them even before the possible overturning of Roe v. Wade, and also the need to abort to save the women's life. I mean, it is heartbreaking that these justices who would overrule Roe v. Wade have no concept of the health issues involved that require an abortion. They have no concept. They're ignorant. And it is unbelievable to me that they would do that. That's right.
How could they be so ignorant?
You can't appoint ignorant people to the highest court in the land. Ignorant, inconsiderate, religious zealots. And this is unbelievable to me when I read about this tragedy. And there is going to be a major, major problem with women needing abortions going to different states. Now, if they also essentially rule that no state can make liberal abortion laws, which would be forthcoming after states start doing that's a real problem. That makes a terrible problem an absolute nightmare.
You know, what I don't understand is...
If they do they do it, and we have to teach this. Now, here's what I propose. If this Roe v. Wade is overturned, you have to have extensively ramped up birth control teaching in the schools. I don't care where you are, but unless you teach these teenage girls and boys how you get pregnant and how you can prevent that, you are dooming many people to unwanted pregnancies, ruined lives, and death.
Yeah.
And that's what the schools have to do. But, of course, this will be fought tooth and nail. Now, my feeling is this, that birth control is not taking a human life. But you have to ask what they really want you to do. They just want to have more babies in the nation, which we can't feed now?
Yeah, I don't understand what we're trying to do.
Well, no, it's all about power over women. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the problem. And why is there such a need to control women?
Because women are essentially smarter than men, because men never grow out of adolescence.
Well, I guess we don't have to worry about getting pregnant, so maybe that helps. But the bottom line is there should be some responsibility of society not to impose, you know, control over women. And there are a lot of women that are raped. They're being abused at home, all kinds of situations, and they don't have the financial means to seek help quite often. So, you know, it's outrageous that we want these babies. What do we want them for? We can't raise them now.
It's the old way of when a woman got in the family way who was not married, she was ostracized as a fallen woman. It goes back to the Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, which graphically depicts how other women were made to feel good by another woman that has fallen. It's
so
depressing. But the problem here is, what do you do if Roe v. Wade is overturned? What you need to do is to make it expensive for males who get women pregnant and out of wedlock or whatever, and make them totally responsible for the support of that child after it arrives, just as you would in a divorce settlement. And the legislators have to do that state by state. But they're not going to do that. How are they going to justify not doing it?
Well, how do you prove
it? It's a crime.
So, but how do you prove that it was rape? How do you prove
DNA. We have the ability to prove that a male has fathered a particular child by matching up the DNA. And so there's absolutely, it's an open and shut case. And they have to start, and that will be a really hard-fought case. And the Supreme Court may eventually have to be making a decision to say that a man who impregnates a woman out of wedlock or against her will is free to do so. That would be an interesting decision, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be. That's really a brilliant concept that puts everybody to task to
nobody wants to talk about that, do they? It's not. It will no longer be he said, she said. It will no longer be he said, she said in the case of rape. If you give the power of DNA,
really interesting is, at the end of the day, I don't hear this sort of conversation anywhere else, John. It's really pathetic. Whatever happened to the women, they're not brainless between their ears. So how come we don't hear it from them? Why are they being silent? You know, they're more vigilant.
Where is Gloria Allred when you need her, right? Gloria Allred particularly should
be
on this issue, but maybe she will be. But I mean, no respect. At least Allred brings the cases against the women, which is more than any attorney general or DA did with Andrew Cuomo.
Well, what's interesting too. What about the Westchester County District Attorney? Can't she come up with concepts that are going to be valid for the community, let's say in Westchester County? She presides over Westchester County. Why can't she promote this as legislation? What's wrong with these people?
There's absolutely no reason. I mean, Rocha is a tremendous hope because she's doing some really tough stuff. And
I don't know what tough stuff she does. What does she do? Tell me what she does.
Well, she just said
she's so brilliant about it.
Well, my mind is failing me because I wasn't.
I don't think your mind is failing you. I don't think she does anything.
Put out a press release last week or so about something that was really good, but I can't quite remember the specifics of it right now. I'll try and do a search.
I don't remember what she wrote last week. She doesn't always send everything out to everybody. So you know what? I just have no time for these games that these people play. It's really getting pathetic. Their job,
and that's what they
get paid for, is to do the job. They don't do the job. They get people who are not even competent to get the stuff out. And that's the problem. They're so thin-skinned that they can't even manage, any sort of a conflict over what they believe is their solid patina, which it's not. It's getting pathetic.
We
have to give them
a
pass every time they turn around. Give me a break.
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
God, help us. Well,
I have to agree.
You know what?
On that.
I don't. I'm sorry. They can be thin-skinned all they want, but I'm not going to give them a pass. I'm sick and tired of the games. They're PR people who don't spell it out, who don't tell you the truth, who cover it up, who use language that's absolutely oblique, and so on and so forth. When does this ever stop? When do we get the truth?
It doesn't.
When do we get?
In fact,
when do we get? Yeah. When do we get? When do we get the law instilled into our system, and when do we abide by it? Oh God, help us to do the right thing. Oh, it never stops. The abuse.
No,
the amount
it
of
does
money.
Not.
Yeah, well, everywhere you look, somebody's making money off of all these things, but other people are not. Look how long we allowed all the debauchery that ended up with all those people getting addicted to all those drugs, all legally, so that one company after the other can make a fortune selling all kinds of crap on the scene, and it was disseminated by all people of doctors. I don't see them going to jail. Do you?
No, you don't. And,
well,
that's
the problem.
And letting people like the Sackloss,
that's right,
or, you know, the off without absolutely any jail time for mass manslaughter, you know, I mean, anathema.
Even
it's a terrible
thing. Recent case, remember the recent case where there were a lot of women, and I'm going to go over that today later on.
Mm-hmm.
I really wonder why women, probably from a perspective of convenience, decided not to breastfeed their babies. And also, I remember when I first came to America, I was really quite surprised because women were not breastfeeding their children in public, and they were frowned upon for doing so. Whereas in Europe, it was almost like a day-to-day scene. And it's not that you got turned on by it. It was simple, you know. A baby was suckling on the mother's teeth, and that's it. And the child was being fed. That's all. Well, so now we have a problem with food, the baby food formula. The company that found itself to be infected and had to shut down, they did absolutely nothing while they were trying to get new ingredients from all over the world, because everything is being brought over from here or there or everywhere else. And they never cleaned up and disinfected their operation. So now that the material is available, they're not ready to disseminate it. Do you believe
I predicted this would happen. I predicted this would happen.
Yes, you did.
2 months ago, that it would not, they wouldn't get any formula till late June. But meanwhile, we're not seeing any stories of whether this is really affecting women's ability to feed their children. Not one.
I was surprised last week, and I published it. One of the people that writes for us is based in Israel, and he has a relationship of trying to build relationships between Jews and Gentiles. And he comes to the United States very, very frequently. And they raised over $2 million worth of baby formula ingredients that they were able to buy in Israel. And he brought it over to the United States, to Texas. And they distributed it there. And they did that this past week. You know, I mean, it's insanity. What the hell's going on? How come we don't have this stuff available here? It's insane.
Well, I know. We keep asking the questions, and nobody has any answers. And this isn't being covered by the so-called national media.
I don't get it, John.
No, I don't get it either.
You know,
it's a natural story.
You know what our problem is, and I don't want to assume for you, you got the same problem as I. The problem is we're really a one-man operation. And we cover more stuff than an entire operation like the New York Times, and God help me, the Journal News, and who knows who else. Because we cover the stuff that really matters. And we don't waste our time with everything else. And we don't try to placate every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there, because if they're wrong, they're wrong. Gonna stop.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean,
and why
the
isn't
best
the way,
way
why isn't the
to
federal
short
government
circuit
suing?
A lie is to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, why and isn't then, the federal government suing the people who were making these opioids? Why aren't we suing them for the cost of getting these people off the addiction? Who's paying for it?
The fentanyl problem is ongoing, and at least we're getting some sort of action out of the DA's office to prosecute fentanyl and have task forces that work on this. But this has been going on for a number of years now.
Exactly.
And,
why did it take so long for them
and
to
I think,
out what's
I
that?
Think the way to do that is to look at the prescriptions that doctors write for these painkillers and do an audit on them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The audits are quite legal, because if you are prescribing fentanyl and they are abused and they get into the wrong hands, then you have every right to go in to that doctor and audit their business.
Yeah.
And see who they're writing it for.
Please.
And what they are doing
so
with
difficult.
It.
So difficult. We got a paper trail.
Yeah.
The paper trail.
I mean, I'm no police officer, and I'm no investigator, but the greatest power of all is the comptroller in New York State, who has the right to audit anybody he wishes.
Mm-hmm.
But he only announces results of his office audits when it's politically expedient. He announces them about every time before he's up for election.
Well, that's what they all do because they have that cycle. The only problem is I wonder if the New York State government would give him more funding so that he could do all these other things that supposedly is supposed to be being done by the federal government. Why isn't the federal government involved? And if the federal government doesn't have the funding, then maybe they should give a little extra funding to New York State, and then you can give it to DiNapoli.
Right, but Medicaid, which is administrated by the federal government, allows an enormous amount of Medicaid bill inflation going on by hospitals. And it is my opinion that hospitals are the major reason why medical costs are so high, because they inflate the bills. Medicaid costs are so high. And if the Republicans take over the government, there's going to be a lot more of it, because they won't make an effort of hospitals for making money, or doctors for making money, or getting money for sticking their head in a hospital room and say, you're still alive. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, it happens just that way. Because you have to, making rounds is great. Why do you have to make rounds when you've got a nurse's station that does the same thing?
Yeah, I don't
they
know.
Have monitors.
That's how the doctor.
Right. So he has
there
to
are
stick
a lot
he
of
or she has to stick her
way.
Head in. Right. Exactly. Making rounds.
I remember when I was in the hospital, there were doctors who came in. It was like $200 for them to say, "Hi, how are you?" That's it.
Yeah. How are you
Never
doing?
Never saw them the rest,
and,
the rest of my stay.
Yeah, but it's really not
doctors.
Funny. It wastes their time.
Yeah, it's not funny.
Yeah, it
yeah,
wastes
you know,
the doctor's
You know who
time.
Permits it? Not the insurance companies permit it. They know what's going on.
Yes,
There's no way to validate somebody coming in and saying, hi, how are you?
Yes. One of the great myths are all the doctors series that were so popular for so many years. And they were basically PR series for hospitals and the health industry. It helped develop this great image while overlooking the horrendous fraud that the hospitals are perpetrating on Medicaid.
Why is there a propensity to allow these things to take place? Isn't the government concerned about its own financial capacity as well? Isn't that their job?
Well, that's really a good question. I think it's because regulators are too close to the industries they regulate. The FAA is very close to the airline manufacturing industry, and they have refused to reprimand Boeing for making the terrible airplane, the 737, that has killed over 1,000 people because of a software error.
Yeah.
And nothing happens to that manufacturer?
Those
airplanes? Nothing?
Well, the reason it doesn't happen is because
But I don't think they were. Yeah.
I don't think so. Because the government is invested in Boeing because of its prowess on the financial marketplace. The government makes money from it when they sell the planes. But I'm concerned that we're going to lose our lead as we allow these deficiencies to become known, and more planes crash, and there are more issues as we go along. And before you know it, the Chinese are going to be the ones selling airplanes, and Boeing will be out of business.
Yeah, well,
China has its own problem. It'll never happen.
Yeah. China now is a huge COVID problem, and that is just too bad for
those people over in China. You can't laugh at their sorrow, but the bottom line is
eventually
they're going to overcome it, and if it's going to take them a year or two, they will, and they have the intellectual capacity to go toe-to-toe with us and eclipse us if they want.
Yes.
And Americans don't even realize it. And
well,
I don't understand
that's
why.
Because we're too busy getting involved in issues that don't concern us.
Such as?
What other people do that you don't like.
Well, there's a lot of that going on, John.
No, seriously, hate is being fanned in this country against immigrants, and you know they're being. And if Americans were treated like that overseas, what do you think would happen? You know, it's just horrible. The way we have treated the immigrants for the last 5 to 6 years, and the Biden administration has bungled that around too. There's a lot to be concerned about. And most of it is really based on people wanting to feel good about themselves by hurting other people that they think are doing wrong to them when they've never even met them. It's a ludicrous idea.
We don't know a lot about different people and different cultures and different ethnicities, and so hopefully we'll wise up as we have an opportunity to move ahead. John, unfortunately, time has flown as it usually does on Mondays, so I have to wish you a good day and thank you for your input. And we have to move on to Michael Edelman, who's on the line. So you take care, John. All the best. Thank you very much.
Good luck to you down there, Mr. Edelman. All right.
All right. Be well, John.
Take care. My pleasure.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Well, we're going to move on to Mr. Michael Edelman, who's on the line right now. Let's bring him in. There we are. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing today?
All right. My pleasure. We should just tell people quite right away. I'm sure they already know you. You're the international as well as the national political analyst and pundit on so many concerns. What is the most striking thing that you've noticed, particularly over the weekend when so much of politics is discussed, especially on Sundays? Anything that strikes you as very, very important that I haven't even considered?
It's become abundantly clear that Donald Trump knew he lost the election, and he decided anyway to tell a big lie. And 35% of the public believes it.
That's the thing that I find very frightening. But was it possible that we didn't really know all of that even 2 months ago? Is it just by this trial, so to speak, that we're learning what we didn't know? Because there was a lot of information that was never really out there before. It wasn't, you know, even the idea that, yeah, go ahead.
The congressional hearing has allowed us to listen to testimony from Bill Barr, from Ivanka Trump, his daughter, from Jared Kushner, and from all the testimony of all the attorneys around him that were telling him that John Eastman's plan to reject the electoral votes and send them back to the states was nonsense and would be rejected by the Supreme Court 9-0. And he chose to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And he continues to do it.
And why does he think that being so brash and so arrogant and denying of what he was told was the reality, and he was also told that Pence would not be able to rule as he wanted him to rule, redo the tabulation of the ballots, which was illegal, and he was told that, and yet he still kept on pointing to Pence as if he was the culprit, and conceivably he could have been lynched. He was instigating an insurrection against Pence.
That's right. They were going to, the leader of the Proud Boys, or the Oath Keepers, I forget which group, confessed that had they been able to catch Pence, they would have killed him.
Yeah, they would have killed him.
And Trump didn't care that his vice president was under attack. He wanted Michael Pence to do something that has never been done in 230 years, that was illegal, unconstitutional, and consisted of an attempted coup d'etat. That's what Trump wanted him to do. And Pence knew from the advice he was getting from Mark Short, his principal aide, and Jacob, his lawyer, he had one job and one job only, and that was to ceremonially preside over the counting of votes that had already been certified, that could not and should not have been sent back. There was no justification for it. There's no such thing as sending them back. They had to be counted. And all of this nonsense about there being irregularities, 62 judges ruled there weren't any irregularities sufficient to change the results of the election. The attorney general told Trump there was no systematic fraud. And yet, because of Rudy Giuliani and Powell and a couple of other nut jobs and John Eastman that persuaded Trump to go ahead and pressure Mike Pence. When, as a matter of common sense, the vice president cannot change the results of an election. unilaterally.
Right.
If he could, correct, it would have happened at least once in the last 230 years, but it hasn't.
That's
and
right.
The reason it hasn't is he hasn't got that power.
Yeah. But it was fascinating that we didn't, maybe I'm the ignorant one, but I didn't realize that all of this was happening. If it wasn't for this particular, televising of the study of what transpired, I didn't know any of this stuff. And I think America was unaware of it as well. Now it seems that the numbers are pointing out that Americans are now more aware of what took place, and they're confident and more comfortable that, 60% of the people now agree that this was an insurrection.
And that Donald Trump should be charged. 60%
yeah.
of America believes he should be charged with a crime, and the hearings are not over yet. You remember what happened with the Watergate.
Yes.
Nobody believed that President Nixon should resign. They thought it was a nothing burger. They thought that it was a political heist and that it wasn't important. But what was important was that he was participating in a cover-up after he orchestrated. So he was part
yes.
of it. And once that became evident as a result of the tapes, Barry Goldwater marched down to the White House and told Nixon that was it. So we are going through our Watergate moments now, except this is a lot more serious because this had to
yes.
do with an attempted overthrow of the government and an attempted reversal of a fair election by somebody who wanted to cling to power. And as the public learns slowly but surely, which is what I told you at the beginning, that these hearings
yes,
would do,
it is.
They would slowly but surely reveal the extent of illegality that Trump engaged in. And as each of these people that saw this part of it or saw that part of it testify before the committee, they're going to weave together a story that will be convincing to every American. We have yet to hear testimony from people that were in the White House at the time he was watching the insurrection on television. He was gleefully promoting for the insurrection.
Yes.
And he said to I don't know who he was talking to, anybody in particular, but he said, can you believe I lost to that guy? Meaning Joe Biden. That means he knew he lost.
Exactly.
And that goes to consciousness of guilt. Because if he knew he lost, then what he was saying to his flock was a complete fabrication, and that is criminal intent.
Yeah. He did show his hand, didn't he? Because he was also it seems that the only upstanding guy while all this insurrection was taking place was none other than Vice President Pence, who stood his ground, refused to lie, refused to capitulate to the president because he knew he was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of pressure this man had to suffer.
That's correct.
And the insurrection was coming after him. And nobody would have cried if he was dead after the fact.
Well, if something had happened to Mike Pence, I believe you could probably charge Donald Trump with
absolutely murder.
Yeah, with complicity in a homicide.
Yeah.
Fact of the matter is, Pence was protected by the Secret Service. They know what they're doing. They ushered him out of the Capitol, but he would not leave the premises because he wanted to go back and count the votes because he knew it was the right thing to do.
It's unbelievable what we went through as a nation. Is there any way to make corrections to these sort of things? How is it conceivable that someone could step into the White House as the president and believe that everybody would turn their heads and bow to him as the power of a nation that used to be just respectful of the country rather than the head honcho. And yet he was able to do that with everybody except with Pence. And of course,
because
they had been doing
it for 4 years.
Yes.
Including Mike Pence.
Unbelievable.
Nobody challenged Donald Trump from the inside for 4 years. He said whatever he wanted to say, whether it was true or not, and nobody called him out. So why would he believe anything else? He thought he could get away with everything. He's a guy that's always gotten away with stuff his entire life. And now it's time to pay the piper.
Yeah, this is the end of the road, hopefully.
I read the National Review. The National Review, by the way, is a very conservative magazine that's been Republican for the last 50 or 60 years. It was started by William F. Buckley, Jr., and their editorials today said that there is no way that Donald Trump should be allowed to be president again.
Wow.
Whether or not you like any of the things he did, the things that he did that disgraced his administration far outweighed any accomplishments he might have had, and there's no way he should be allowed anywhere near the levers of power. And that's a conservative editorial board, more conservative than the Wall Street Journal, but not owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Yes, that's right. That's amazing. Do you think that America can, after this thing gets resolved, will America be able to move to a different beat? We need to heal as well. Will that be part of the healing process?
Yeah, I think if they indict Donald Trump, it's a problem politically because I think it will make him into a martyr. And there'd be a trial and his supporters would go crazy and they'd scream witch hunt and blah, blah, blah. I think what they should do is indict everybody around Donald Trump that had any part in the insurrection, including the sitting members of the United States Congress that were giving tours to the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers the day before.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people, based on their emails and blah, 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 they should all be indicted as either primary defendants or indicted co-conspirators or unindicted co-conspirators. And that's the way you should handle it so that Donald Trump is not himself charged. Because I think that will do more harm than good, even though I believe he committed criminal acts.
Uh-huh. That's a very interesting concept of how to get, it will make him suffer probably much more than any other thing. So he wouldn't become, I guess a poster child, being somehow destroyed by the Democratic Party. Is there any lucidity to the Republican concept with this failing of this president? Is that going to give a resuscitation to the Republican Party, which I think it probably will, without Trump being there?
I think the Republican Party, they got a lot of people in the Republican Party that are waiting for Trump to go away. Starting with Ron DeSantis and going to Ted Cruz, going to Mike Pompeo, there's all kinds of candidates ready to run. But I think that the stench of Donald Trump is going to prevent Republicans from regaining the presidency for quite a while. They may win the House. They may win the House and the Senate, but that's what happens ordinarily in the midterm, especially with the president's ratings as low as Joe Biden's are. So remember Obama said we took a shellacking, and Bill Clinton got beaten badly in the midterms. So it's not unusual. It has nothing to do with who's going to win the next presidential election, and I think if they end up nominating a far-right conservative, first of all, if they nominate Donald Trump, you're going to get Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger run in a presidential primary in six states. They'll qualify for the ballot in six states, the six states that Donald Trump needs to be president. And you know what those are, the swing states from the last election, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, Florida. And they'll take enough regular Republican votes away from him to deprive him from winning that state. So that's if he's nominated.
Wow.
If he's not nominated, then the person who is not going to have the kind of cult status that Donald Trump has. He'll just be a regular Republican. And I think that's going to be tough for a regular Republican to shed the shame that the Republican Party bears in not condemning him out of the box for what he did on
all
the 6th
people,
of January.
Well, of all people on the Republican side of the ledger, Liz Cheney is probably going to be exalted to even a higher level of respect on the national stage. She's absolutely brilliant, you know, in her expression of thoughts and ideas, and she's been proven right because she's on the panel. So she's there every day, and I don't know, she's just absolutely brilliant. I'm surprised by her language. I never got to know her that well. You know, I wasn't paying attention to her. She wasn't my state.
Liz Cheney has also been stricken, right, from the Republican leadership. And she's being challenged in Wyoming for her House seat, and she'll probably lose that election. Donald Trump has endorsed her primary opponent. So she may lose her job as a result of this, but whether or not she does, she's still going to run. And don't forget, Kinzinger is not running for re-election. So, but either one of them could head up a national ticket, or both of them. Right, Cheney Kinzinger, for example, and head up a national ticket that would deprive Donald Trump of winning the election, which would be the purpose of them running.
Absolutely unbelievable. It really is amazing. So are we getting back to it with that scenario in place? Does it seem that the political parties are going to take a position and show America which way to go? Because if the Republicans are going to be able to do well, you know, running and making sure that Trump doesn't ever get a chance to come back, that's going to be huge, won't it?
Well, it's going to put the Republican Party in disarray for a while, don't you think? There's going to be the Trump base.
I guess so.
And then there's going to be everybody else.
And
the problem for the Republican Party is Kevin McCarthy is a perfect example of the problem that the Republican Party has. He's dying to be Speaker of the House, and he knows that Trump doesn't want him to be Speaker, and so he refuses to take a position on even the most plainly illegal issues that Donald Trump's involved in. And when Marjorie Taylor Greene speaks, Kevin McCarthy's silent. So he won't do the right thing because he doesn't want to get slapped down by Donald Trump. But, you know, is that a position that Republicans want to be in for a national election? I don't think it is.
I can't imagine it myself. But you know what? Maybe I'm so naive because I used to think in America, somehow or another, maybe it's just like, I don't know why I used to think that in America, people did the right thing as opposed to being so, I guess, influenced by other people because of their power. So, but does everything need to be done that way? Aren't there ethical standards that we have to abide by? And I used to think America did that, but I'm starting to see it's not quite the case. So
well, when
people
Barry,
just
when
do
Barry
what
Goldwater,
works for them.
When Barry Goldwater marched down from the Senate to tell Richard Nixon the jig was up, he put his country over his political party.
Yes.
And that's what these Republicans are not doing. What they are trying to
do, because
white Christian nationalism has taken over a huge portion of the Republican Party. And those people understand there's a demographic change that's going to allow black and brown people to participate in the democracy, and they don't want that to happen. So in many of the states, they are running for offices like Secretary of State, and the job of the Secretary of State is to control elections. And so they want to do state by state what Donald Trump tried to do on January 6th. They want to ensure that one of their own, whether it's Donald Trump or some other ultra-right conservative, becomes president of the United States. And they don't care how they do it. It's not about having a diverse democracy. They want the opposite of a diverse democracy. They want to control the levers of government, and they want to impose white Christian nationalist values on America. It's that simple.
Well, that's what they
want. You can read a book.
And
you can read a book called "The Flag and the Cross." There's a book called "The Flag and the Cross." The Flag and the Cross. It's not a very big book, but it will lay all of this out for you.
Okay. That's something to read. I'm going to write it down. So the big question then becomes, well, that might be what some people want to do. What about the rest of the country? Is there a balance? Can we be comforted by knowing what the Democrats are doing? Are they doing the right thing?
Well, which Democrats?
They're not the ones under attack. I mean, they're bringing the other side.
The problem for the Democrats is they've got nutty views on the far left as well, like defunding the police departments, right? They've got some notions that aren't palatable even to minority communities. So they've got those problems, but that pales in comparison to trying to change government by force.
Yes. Wow. That's truly amazing.
What we need to do is let these hearings play out. I watched all of them, and I think they're fascinating, because in every hearing, you're getting new information. It's not just churning old information. You're seeing new people testify. You're seeing videos of depositions that the committee has taken that they are releasing for the first time. And each of the people who leads that session of the hearing is doing a very, very good job in tying all of it together. And particularly Jamie Raskin, who is a constitutional scholar.
Yeah.
And who was on the committee.
I guess what I find interesting too is when it came to covering all of these things that were taking place, there was just a lot of opinion on both sides, because we really didn't know what was going on, did we? The media didn't have such access. So whether it's the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Journal, the Wall Street Journal, or whatever else you looked at, they didn't know what was really going on, did they?
January 6th?
Yeah.
Okay. They didn't know what was going on when?
They didn't know what was going on even before January 6th. They didn't know exactly what was happening in the machinations of the president.
But how could
they? Couldn't. That's
nobody,
the point.
Nobody in the president's inner circle was going to go to the New York Times and tell him what was going on, because, you know, until such time as the president led the insurrection, these people were clinging on to power. And now it's a question of their reputations going forward. Do they want to cover for a president who did something clearly illegal? Or do they want to stay on the right side of history?
I think they would want to stay on the right side of history.
That's correct.
In other words, so that being the case, though, was it inconceivable, considering that even Ivanka and her husband and others must have known what was going on? Why doesn't anybody call up the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or the New York
because
Times.
Because as long as Trump was in power, it wasn't in their political or financial interest to do so. It was only,
remember the
story about the emperor with no clothes?
Yes, absolutely.
It's only when the little boy said he's naked that everybody
Correct.
Said, wow, you're right, you know? So it was only when it became perfectly obvious that Donald Trump lit the fire under the insurrection, it became obvious
mm-hmm.
that he committed a crime. And everybody's running
only
to the hills,
then.
Including Bill Barr, who had defended
yes.
Trump throughout the time that he was Attorney General. Now Bill Barr is saying that if Donald Trump believed any of that, he was detached from reality.
He's saying that now.
Now he's saying it. He's the chief law enforcement officer. He could have said it a year ago.
Well, he could have at least said it. The big question is, you know, okay, he may not have wanted to make it public, but does it seem illogical for someone like a Bill Barr to say to the President of the United States, hey, Donald, you're making a mistake, and this is wrong, and it's illegal, and I'm telling you so, and you're pushing the envelope a little bit too far?
Well, the problem is that, yeah, but Donald Trump didn't want to hear it. You say, you could tell him, but so what?
Okay.
A guy like Peter Navarro wouldn't tell him. A guy like Rudy Giuliani was apparently drunk when he was pushing this election fraud lie. The people in the room said Giuliani was totally, totally inebriated when he was making these recommendations to Donald Trump.
Wow.
He took the advice of crackpots over the advice of the adults in the room, the people that are paid to give the president good, legal, solid advice. He didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
It's like the people that watch Fox News. They don't want to hear facts. Mm. They want to hear what they already believe.
Is that the human condition?
It's called confirmation bias.
Okay. So if that's
okay, you want to confirm that what you believe already is in fact the truth and that you couldn't possibly be misled or be dumb. Nobody wants to admit that they're stupid, and nobody wants to admit they've been conned, okay? But this guy, Trump, by pushing these lies, you know how much money he raised post-election by pushing these lies to his supporters? Do you know how much he raised? You want to guess?
Can't imagine.
Can't imagine.
$20 million.
$10 million, $20 million, $50 million.
Yeah.
$250 million.
Oh my God. Wow.
And you know where the money went? It didn't go to the supposed funds to the
pocket?
Defense. Yeah. and his kids' pocket.
Yeah.
It didn't go where it was supposed to go. It was supposed to be raised to help defend Donald Trump. It didn't go there.
Hmm.
So he's a con. He's a con guy.
Yeah, he is. So it seems though that the human dynamic is built on interpersonal relationships and prowess over the other, whoever the other is. So there's a pecking order as well. And it's amazing when you come to think that America, almost 300 years of existence, and the first time that it's been broken down as a government took place under Trump. Because before there was allegiance to the Constitution, which is so unique in the world, and yet it broke down for the first time under Trump. Unbelievable.
That's the first time
there
was
no orderly
transition.
That to me is like a smack in the face. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Unbelievable. Well, on that unbelievably, you know, lucid note, I want to thank you again.
You're welcome.
The difference between me and maybe a lot of other people is when I talk to people like you, I'm looking to learn. I'm not looking to preach. I'm looking for facts. I'm not looking for opinions. your opinions are based on fact. So that's why
they
are so solid. They are.
And that's why it's frustrating
to
talk to a Trump supporter.
Well, you know, there are enough people out there you could talk to that you don't need to talk to them.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if there's anybody that can proselytize and share thoughts, because I don't know if the other side is willing to listen.
They're not.
Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
People are not interested.
They're not interested
on one side of the ledger or the other.
They're not interested in learning the facts. I told you,
yeah.
Confirmation bias. They only want to hear what they already believe.
Yeah. Not a good thing. Not a good thing.
Nope.
Well, that's
nope.
not the way to live your life.
No, it's not.
But maybe in politics it is.
No, it's really not. You got to face the music.
Exactly. Well, all the best to you. Thank you very, very
all right,
much,
I'll see
Michael
you next
Edelman.
Week.
Always a pleasure. Take
right.
care. You be well.
Bye-bye.
Stay healthy. Well, there we have it. Michael Edelman, international as well as national political analyst and pundit. He does it all. And he's always ahead of the curve, which is really what's mind-blowing as well. So let's just quickly look and see what else is going on at our end of the spectrum. Let me just quickly check. I think that we're supposed to have Yonkers Republican politician Ron Matten join us today. So, but I'm not sure because he hasn't called in yet. And I'm just going to check to see if I can get a hold of him. So bear with me a second. And let me just see. Oh, okay, I think I'll be able to get this done. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, so I've got this on. Okay, I think I can get this done. At least I hope so. Give me a moment now. Yes, I think so. Okay, I had to think this one out to see how can I use my phone, and without disconnecting the line to the studio. So bear with me a moment here. I think we'll get this done. All right, 1 minute. All right. Okay, here it is. As I thought it was. Oh, here it is. All right. Let me see. Okay. All right. 1 second. I'm sending Ron Matten a message. Okay. 1 second. All right. So I think I sent him the message. It looks like I did. And we'll find out very, very shortly. Find out very, very shortly if he's going to be able to join us or not. So sorry for the delay. And so hopefully he'll be able to answer very quickly. And let's see, we go back to the studio screen. Here we are. Okay, here we are. We're on the right path. Okay, so it looks like we are on the right path. Now let me quickly go over to some other issues and so we can cover some of the news. All right. All right, so while we're waiting for a moment, hopefully he'll be able to text us back. And so while I'm looking for some other stuff here, and we'll see in a moment if we're all okay. All right, 1 second. All right. OK. Okay, I'm trying to look and see if we've got everything in place. All right. Well, what I'm going to do is I figured that I'll be getting a text message one way or the other. But if I'm not, then you know, there's no point in just hanging around and waiting with you as well in anticipation that he'll be texting us. So he probably will, and we'll go from there. Okay, so let's cover some other issues, which hopefully you'll find pertinent. Now, let's look at just what's happening around here. This is what's interesting from Ukraine. Evidently, Ukraine awaits the European Union with respect to whether they will receive candidate status, and Zelensky is declaring this a historic week. So the president says that it's a historic week, and it's begun because Kiev is awaiting a decision from Brussels as to whether the country will be conferred the European Union candidate status. So we'll find out what's going on there. And Moscow says its forces have seized the village of Metyorkin near Severodonetsk. Austria is going to reopen a coal plant due to reduced gas deliveries from Russia. And the European Union foreign ministers are meeting to discuss ways to free grain stuck in Ukraine due to a Russian blockade. So Hungary is proposing a route for Ukraine grain exports. So Hungary has proposed its territory as a possible route for Ukrainian grain exports. The proposal comes as exports are suffering a severe disruption due to a Russian blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea port. So Hungary's Peter Szijjártó made the offer at a meeting of European Union foreign ministers in Luxembourg. We have offered to let through Hungary's territory, moreover, to facilitate the passage of any food shipments destined for various parts of the world from Ukraine, mainly to North Africa or the Middle East, Szijjártó had said. Budapest's foreign minister also said he expected no disruption to Russian gas supplies to Hungary. Well, the European Union needs to show Ukraine that the besieged country belongs to the bloc, German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said on Monday. And it's important now not to go by the book, but to take the advantage of this historic moment and make it clear to Ukraine with a view to its prospects. You belong in the center of the European Union, she said. Quote, we are now in a moment where we have to make a decision, Baerbock said, and warned the European Union must not, quote, find excuses and follow a pattern of postponing big decisions. Ukraine's Kuleba says that Russia has no right to threaten Lithuania. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba on Monday criticized Russia after Moscow accused Lithuania of imposing trade restrictions on the transit of European goods to Kaliningrad. Okay, looks like we may have got, oh, he's on the line. Our main man is already on the line. Well, there he is. I can't believe it. Mr. Matten, what a pleasure to have you on this morning.
Thanks, Ezzy. Sorry, I was having a little cell phone issues this morning. Was able to finally
I can
get on.
Imagine. You know
how
what?
Are you
it's
today?
Amazing, actually, that we get so much accomplished in life as it is, with so much internet problems and cell phone problems.
I'm on T-Mobile.
Life has become more complex, hasn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I guess with having all the apps and everything running, I think I have such a great price with the plan I have. Everyone's signing up, and impacting throughput. So,
well, there's a lot that's going on.
Yeah, so
well,
it looks like we're in primary.
No, go ahead. We're in a what?
We're in primary
yes,
season
we are.
Right now. Early voting started over the weekend. On the Republican side, we have some choices for governor. On the Democratic side, we have some choices for governor. I think our assembly races are set for November. And I'm not sure we do have a again, there'll be another primary for congressional seats and for our state senators and that. But I believe the Republicans may have a rabbi as a candidate. Haven't gotten confirmation. Well, for to run against Jamal Bowman in the 16th.
Oh, so someone's vying for Jamal Bowman's seat, and he's a rabbi?
He's a rabbi, and he's looking to run as a Republican. Levy Welton.
Okay. I don't know him.
I believe you. Yeah, the name has come up. I haven't gotten confirmation. He's out of, I believe, the Lincoln Park Synagogue.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, yes, Rabbi Welton with a W, yes. I've heard his name, but I didn't know that he was running.
Yeah, and so I've read some of his material. He's, I'm going to say, for a modern Orthodox rabbi, some of the writings are fairly progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And insightful. And I look forward, I'm hoping he becomes the candidate. So I think that'll be a
representation for the area.
That's really the only, I think it was, we do have Kristen Kerr running against Andrea Stewart Cousins and Frank Murtha running against Shelley Mayer. Kind of rounds out, I guess, the election. I don't think I've left anybody out for this season. We don't have a judicial candidate. So I think Ada Medina is going to sail through.
Oh, yeah, there isn't anyone challenging her. I was wondering a little bit more about just in the basics, you know, we're finding out a lot of stuff that happens on the national stage with regard to Trump, and we've got all these, you know, information coming out. But there's also a challenge for Democrats in the political arena, and there is a rising interest in republicanism. And certainly when we look at Yonkers, for example, I guess one could think of, you know, Yonkers being a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll. We infuse our politics with a little bit of that's Democrat and a little bit that's Republican, and I just never know exactly where we are. We seem to be almost 50-50 between one and the other. What are the prospects of a resurgent Republican platform? Maybe not for a particular seat, but concepts that would infuse an interest that was diminished by the presidency's demeanor.
So, you know, we have a pendulum that, you know, swings left and swings right.
Right.
You know, and the pendulum has gotten pretty high to the left of late. Even let's take the economy and we'll ring fence that for a moment. Let's still talk about things like bail reform. You know, we still have a violent crime problem in New York, and it's not
definitely.
It's, you know, you can't put, somebody is firing a gun. All right, these guns don't fire themselves. And people want to say this is the readily available access to guns. Well, you know, if I can get a kitchen knife just as easily as I can, you know, find a stone or something else. So it's not a question of the gun being the instrument of violence. It's the person. There are criminals out there, and the criminals have been allowed over the last 3 years to function. Now, people are going to tell you that there hasn't been a rise in crime since the bail reform laws, and that's not true. You can go through and you can look, even in Westchester County, there's been a rise in crime since 2019. I will contend, as George Latimer has put out, since 2017 when he took office, the overall crime rate may still be down. I haven't crunched the numbers in the last 2 months. But since 2019, crime has been on the rise. And crime has been on the rise regionally since 2019
yeah.
because we've taken police officers and we've put them in a category with criminals. Right? We've not given them the respect and reverence that they're due for going out and protecting the public. So they're not obeyed as they should be. Stop question and frisk was taken away early on, and I believe mm-hmm. that did reduce guns on the street. We didn't really do that in Yonkers, but it was
no.
done in New York. It was done in the city. And, you know, if New York City gets a cold, Yonkers sneezes because we're so close.
Exactly.
So we really, you know, once the city under de Blasio did away with many of the Giuliani and Bloomberg reforms, broken windows, I think, was a policy that really kept that turned the tide on crime. And we walked away from that about 8 years ago. We really need to be looking at broken windows again. I know Eric Adams is trying to do this in a political context,
mm-hmm.
but broken windows worked. Question and frisk worked, and they actually kept particular neighborhoods safer because of how they worked. So we really need to get back to those basic policing strategies. And to turn around and say, you know, predictive policing, that's a politically correct phrase to take things like CompStat, which predictive policing was found on. It's really going
yeah.
in and seeing where crime is increasing and then putting the resources to quell that crime in the neighborhoods.
Well, I know in Yonkers, for example, in the last year or so, under Mueller, who used to be the police commissioner, he's no longer, he stopped using CompStat. And then when I found
yeah.
out about it and I wrote about it, he reinstalled it. So,
yeah, he wrote an article with Mimi Rocha called it predictive policing and tried
yes.
to change the window dressing. But really, it is CompStat.
Yeah.
You go in, you look at the type of crimes. I go to some of the neighborhood association meetings throughout the city. I go to some
yeah.
of the precinct council meetings throughout the city.
Uh-huh.
You know, auto theft is on the rise in Yonkers, particularly in those
yes.
border areas. McLean Avenue, not just auto theft, but the catalytic converter theft.
Yes.
You know, you see videos now, and this is in Yonkers. Security guards don't want to challenge somebody who comes into a store and fills up a bag with ice cream or fills up a bag with something from CVS because they don't want to be accused of profiling, if you will.
Yeah.
It's
you know what's very interesting is that it's gotten to the point, like I go to Walgreens to pick up my medication, and now everything is behind some plastic cover. And when you need something, you're only permitted to press a button, and then somebody from the facility comes to that section and opens up whatever it is that you want, you know, and unlocks the ability to pick up this item, and then they close it again. I mean, the cost must be astronomical.
Right, that adds cost
just to have people walking about.
It doesn't add cost to the company because they're going to pass that on to you.
Yes, they do.
You're paying for that individual service. You're paying for Sam Drucker to serve you individually, if you remember that show.
Yes, unbelievable.
So, you know, that's a cost borne by us. That's probably a reason for some of the inflation as well because companies have to allocate, you know, for that shrinkage is what they call it in the industry. You know, so if they can only sell,
have we been able to resolve?
They can only sell 10. Pardon?
Yeah. Go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was going to say if they can only sell 10 items and two of the items are going to get stolen, they're going to add that cost onto the remaining 8.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so that
so
not
that,
only
that becomes a real problem.
Your, not only is the cost added on to the remaining eight, but the profit, because they still have to go through the work of ordering it, accounting for it, and putting it out on a shelf. So you're paying, you're going to pay for more, you're going to pay a higher cost for items when things get more regularly stolen.
Absolutely. What about this whole concept of defunding the police? That was almost like a pushback to the anti-black sentiment that people professed was part of the milieu, the environment of the police department, but particularly that of New York City. I don't know if we suffered the same sort of challenge in Yonkers, for example, or in other parts of Westchester. I'm not quite sure.
So defunding the police was grown out of academia. And it was grown out of academia saying the police, we shouldn't be policing. We should be providing social services. The misnomer there was the two are not mutually exclusive. You can still provide social services and have a well-trained and robust police force. Because again, the first effort in the police is not arresting somebody. The first effort in police is trying to talk somebody out of or away from or discourage criminal activity. Once that can't be achieved, and again, that's somewhat outside of the police jurisdiction. That's within the confines of sociology, giving kids on the street a different person to look up to and not a gang member. But you still need a robust police force. You need a robust undercover police force to go in and find out all of this intel on where the gangs are, what the gangs do, how the gangs are recruiting, where the drugs are coming from. That's all requires police. You're not going to do that with sociologists and psychologists. You're going to do that with a police force. You're going to work on social programs outside of the police department. To say that you can't, you know, you have to defund the police to fund sociology programs is a misnomer.
Well, it definitely is, and it certainly didn't create any resolution of this issue of bias towards the people of color who felt that they were not being treated correctly. Are we just blasting the cops for the wrong reasons? Are they becoming the scapegoats in a political discussion that we're not having?
I believe so. So if you look nationally, in New York State, New York City, and Yonkers, we have some of the best trained police officers are well trained. I don't think we generally have a problem with racism. Again, you know, you can have a half a percent of a police force or a half a percent can be problematic, and you're gonna find over professions, it's probably least with the amount of vetting that happens, psychological vetting, physical vetting. You're probably going to find that least so within a police department and much less within New York City and Yonkers than you would nationally.
Do you feel that the police in Yonkers who get trained in Valhalla, which is in up in Westchester County, are our police people, are they being trained well? Or is it they may be trained well in police work, but we don't have the necessary personnel who know how to talk somebody down from, an assault in the home or some other issue that's more mental than a psychological issue rather than a criminal issue. Really well trained? I don't think so. I don't find that to be so.
I can only speak to the final product and the final, because I've not been through the training. I don't know the curriculum. I can only speak to the final product and the final product as I experience it. So I don't, okay. You know, I don't spend my days in Nodine Hill. So I don't know how the officers, I have seen the officers in Nodine Hill interact, and I've not seen anything that seems inappropriate. But I can only talk about the experience I have. And I know some people will say, well, look, you know, you're fair-skinned. Police are going to treat you differently. I've been in Getty Square. I've been down at Vonderdunk Park. I've been on the waterfront. And I've not seen police treat anyone that looks different than I do, that may be darker, any differently than I'm treated. So I can only speak to my own experiences, and I can only speak to what I've witnessed. But I don't see that we have a problem in Yonkers. I can only judge the training by what I see in the final product because I've not experienced the training.
No, I hear you. That makes a lot of sense. I guess the thing that I find offensive is I heard when Mueller was the police commissioner, he said that the crime rate had gone down 10% in the last year. I don't know how he could have figured that it went down 10%. Because, again, no substantiation of anything that he ever said. It was all opinion, and I'm sick and tired of opinion. I just want facts. That's all
so
I want.
I have looked at the DOJ website, and, you know, I'm going to quote off the top of my head, so these are, you know,
okay.
I can't give you any exact figures. But from 2010 to 2019, there was a dramatic decrease in crime throughout all of New York. And particularly in the metropolitan areas of New York City. I don't know how Yonkers equates into that. But there was a dramatic decrease over those 10 years. In 2019 to 2022, there was an uptick in New York City, and there was an uptick in the regional area around New York City. And it certainly didn't go back. It didn't tick up to where we were in 2010, but there was an uptick, and you can see this. It came down as a long end of a V, and then uptick. So it kind of looked like it's a reverse check mark, you know, a left-handed check mark, if you will, from 2010 to 2022, and the slope in that short end of the check mark was higher than the slope of the line coming down from 2010 to 2019.
Hopefully with the new police commissioner we have, his name is Sapienza. So hopefully under his watch, we're going to be able to see better results, assuming that some of the issues that may exacerbate the crime will be ameliorated somehow or another. Also, the city, certainly in Yonkers, we're going through a resurgence of investment and building. So we're just in the process now of going through like a second phase, rejuvenating the city and with more prospects of funding coming into the city as well. So we just may be at a different stage in our life as a city. So it'll be very interesting to see how that comes out.
The city's done some great things over the last 10 years, and I think we've gotten to a really good spot where, you know, having Lionsgate, I think, makes us a destination place. Because a lot of things will start getting filmed around the city, and that means people will want to come and visit the city. You know, we have a new school being built on McLean Avenue. We have the possibility of another new school in the Leakin Watts Rising Ground campus, as that campus is being sold. So that's another opportunity for growth. Well, you know, there are a couple things that just keep us from being a destination. One is the quality of our schools. We're really not where we want to be. Look, my tax bill.
I did hear something that was very interesting, but I wasn't able to get confirmation because it's so typical of Yonkers but I understand that division of Syracuse University is thinking of opening up a facility in Ridge Hill or in the shopping center along Central Avenue. So it's going to be very interesting to see where that comes from.
You know, one of the interesting things that have happened with the pandemic is, education may get a little cheaper because of distance learning. Distance learning is becoming more common. It's had to be embraced during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And, having a place like Syracuse open up a satellite area probably helps support a distance learning program as well, because you have a place to go register, you have a place to see things.
Exactly.
And Syracuse is one of the better colleges in New York
mm-hmm.
State. How that will compete with our local colleges, but it does give a chance for another tier. I think Syracuse becomes a tier greater than Manhattan College, Pace, Iona. It's that next tier. Fordham and Syracuse are probably, depending on what you pick, Fordham and Syracuse are probably on the same tier academically.
Right.
But there may be those who want to support Syracuse, which would be give you another choice. That would be great.
Yeah. Hey, the more choice, the better. And the point is that there's an interest and there's evidently a population that would be interested. So
did you know that
shows
that
we're coming of age, so to speak, because we're attracting more investment in the city.
So Boston, Cambridge is usually thought as like this academic mecca because of all of the colleges and universities, and particularly you have Harvard and you have MIT, Emerson, Boston College, all kind of in this area in Boston. But New York City and its surrounding areas, which include Westchester, have more
mm-hmm.
colleges, have more higher education degree granting institutions than the Cambridge area does. We're actually.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. A provost I work with was telling me that New York City really should be thought of. New York City and its surrounding areas should be thought as the mecca for education, because not only do we have more degree-granting institutions, but we have degree-granting institutions at various tiers, which allow different students of different achievements
mm-hmm.
to be placed. So you have a far greater chance of achieving your degree in New York City than you do in the Boston area.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's very exciting.
So it's very fitting.
I can't believe it.
Syracuse should come here.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. So that'll be very interesting. Well, I want to thank you for making the time for us today. It's always a pleasure. And
okay, thank you very much. Be well.
No, thank you
safe.
For your time. You too. Be well. And thank you
bye
again.
Bye.
There we have it, folks. None other than Ron Matten. He's a politician, Republican, and hopefully he'll be running for some political office in Yonkers. Very, very astute, very educated, and just very compelling, at least I find him. So I guess the more people will get to know him, the more likely that he'll have an opportunity to vie for political office. So let's move on to something else. So I'm thrilled that he was able to make the time. Bear with me a moment. And want to move into one other thing here. Bear with me a second. Okay. This. All right. Let me just quickly look and see if we've got, want to see what we have here on the on the domestic scene. This is very interesting. Actually, we posted this. So it seems that some American and Israeli gotten together and sent over donations to people in Texas who were really trying to get a hold of baby formula, which they had not. And so they were able to bring in, I think it was $2 million worth of baby formula into the United States, and it was delivered by this agency that works out of Israel called the Genesis 123 Foundation. So it's called The Families of the World Will Be Blessed Through You, because that was the process. It's the all donated funding for the baby formula. So I think you'll certainly find that of interest if you read the Yonkers Tribune website, because we published it there. And there's just a lot of other things that's going on. Let me just see what else we got here. This is very interesting with regard to the Mercosur has written a story. It's a publication based in South America. It thinks that Paraguay's intelligence officer Esteban Aquino on Friday confirmed that the Iranian pilot, whose name is Gholam Reza Hassemi, is held in Argentina, was not a namesake, but the actual member of the Quds Force, a division of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps specialized in military intelligence operations. And so very interesting, because it seems a former Mahan Air Boeing 747-300 airplane had been seized at Buenos Aires Ezeiza Airport for suspicious maneuvers, now under the ownership of Venezuela's Emtrasur, pending investigation on the aircraft and on the crew of Iranian and Venezuelan nationals. So the Paraguayan officials' remarks would contradict statements from Argentina's security minister, Aníbal Fernández, who claimed the pilot's identity had not been established with full accuracy. Well, point is that we published this on the 19th, and we think it's going to stick. So, because that's what the information we got from Argentina, as well as in Paraguay. Now, let's just look at a couple of other things. One second here. Where are we? This is very, very interesting. Germany is going to fire up its coal plants as Russia has turned down the gas. Means as Russia reduces its supply of natural gas, Economy Minister Robert Habeck has said that Germany must curb its usage. Otherwise, things, quote, could get tight in the winter, he said. Germany must limit its use of gas for electricity production and prioritize the filling of storage facilities to compensate for a drop live from Russia. That's what Economy Minister Robert Habeck had said on Sunday. So in a move that goes against the principles of his environmentally friendly Green Party, the country will also have to increase the burning of coal, Habeck had said. The Russian gas company Gazprom announced last week that it was reducing supplies through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline for technical reasons, saying there had been delays in the repair of compressor turbines by the German company Siemens Energy. So Germany has come under intense criticism in the past, particularly from the United States, for its reliance on cheap Russian energy sources, while Washington has always seen as a at-risk, security risk for Europe. So we'll have to see what goes on over there. You never can tell what's going on over there. So let's just quickly look and see what else is happening on the international front. Bear with me a moment. And this is interesting. Kazakhstan, teams of voters are backing reforms to reject the founder's legacy. Kazakhstan's voters appear to have backed reforms that remove powers from the president and end privileges enjoyed by former leader Nursultan Nazarbayev. Interesting. Kazakh voters overwhelmingly approved constitutional changes that ostensibly end former leader Nursultan Nazarbayev's three-decade grip on power in the country, election authorities said today. Well, the reforms for a new Kazakhstan, quote-unquote, has come from President Kasym Jomart Tokayev, Nazarbayev's hand-picked successor in the wake of violence earlier this year. So both the former and current presidents are allies of neighboring Russia, with Tokayev having called in troops from a Moscow-led security bloc of former Soviet states to suppress January's unrest. Nurlan Abdulov, chair of the National Electoral Commission, said that 77.17% of voters had backed the move, while 18.6% voted against. According to Abdulov, there was a turnout of more than 68% in Sunday's referendum, meaning that more than half of the voters had cast their ballots. And rules stipulated that at least half of registered voters had to take part in the plebiscite for it to be considered valid. The referendum can be considered validated, Abdulov had said. So what was the vote about? The poll on constitutional changes had been by many as a chance to close the chapter on the country's former leader. According to Tokayev, the proposed changes will empower lawmakers and dismantle the super-presidential system currently in place. But the reform also ends a slew of privileges enjoyed by Nazarbayev. Tokayev said that the vote was laying the foundation for the Second Republic, end quote. Tokayev said the vote was acclaimed, or rather was aimed at laying the foundation for the Second Republic, end quote. Nazarbayev stands to lose his title as Elbasy, or Father of the Nation. The 81-year-old, who ruled the ex-Soviet state for almost three decades, retained his title, helping to cement his outgoing political influences even after stepping down in 2019. Another amendment nixes Nazarbayev's right to run for president more than two times. The reforms will also ban the president's relatives from holding government positions, another controversial issue in the oil-rich country. They also significantly strengthen the role of the country's parliament, restore the constitutional court, and abolish the death penalty. Tokayev moves against protesters Nazarbayev. The vote came with Kazakhstan still reeling from violent unrest in January, left over 220 people dead. And people had taken to the Supreme Court. They were taken to the streets to protest a sharp rise in fuel prices, but the marches quickly grew into a wide front protest movement against government policies and the legacy of Nazarbayev. So President Tokayev responded by clamping down on the unrest and inviting peacekeepers from Russia and several other ex-Soviet states into Kazakhstan to help him restore order. He decried the protesters as bandits and terrorists. Security forces were given shoot-to-kill orders. At the same time, however, Tokayev moved against Nazarbayev and his allies. This surprising turn from a politician widely seen as ruling from his predecessor's shadows. 69-year-old former Nazarbayev, from his position as all right, 1 second. So President Tokayev responded by clamping down on the unrest and inviting peacekeepers from Russia and several other ex-Soviet states into Kazakhstan to help him restore order. He decried the protesters as bandits and terrorists. Security forces were given shoot-to-kill orders at the same time. However, Tokayev moved against Nazarbayev and his allies, a surprising turn from a politician widely seen as ruling from his predecessor's shadow. So the 69-year-old removed Nazarbayev from his position as the head of the powerful Security Council. He also arrested several All right, so we'll see what else is going on. All right, I think that that's where we are today. All right, so we're going to say goodbye here, too. Okay. All right, we'll see what goes on over here. All right, let me just check one other thing here. Bear with me a moment. I think that that's it. All right, I think, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is what I was looking for and I'd forgotten about this. Question is, why women use formula instead of breast milk? Supermarkets across the United States have run out of baby formula, which many women use instead of breast milk, and the question is why? So this is the first piece of a two-part article series about some of the reasons why some mothers opt for formula instead of breastfeeding. And we have attempted to cover as many of the deciding factors across these two articles, but this is at the heart of very personal individual decision for every new mother. And so most of the world's women start breastfeeding after giving birth, but only 44% exclusively breastfeed to the 6th month, according to the World Health Organization. So infants can't eat solid food in the first half year of their lives, leaving them reliant on either breast milk or baby formula. And this fact makes the current formula shortage in the United States, where only 1 in 4 babies are exclusively breastfed for 6 months, dire. So the baby formula shortage was caused by production and supply chain issues, and an investigation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration at factory run by a major producer of baby formula, Abbott Nutrition. Well, the company is one of 4 that together produce about 90% of formula in the United States market. Although production had been getting back on track, Abbott Nutrition had to pause production yet again at the factory when a storm hit the site in Michigan on June 13. Well, the number of babies breastfed exclusively to 6 months by region in Western Europe is 25%, North America 26%, East Asia and the Pacific, 31%, Middle East and North Africa, 33%, Latin America and the Caribbean, 37%, West and Central Africa, 37%, Eastern Europe and Central Asia, 55%, and 41%, and then Southern and Southern Africa, 55%, and South Asia, 57%. And these are global databases from UNICEF based on 2021, and so that's the case. The research suggests that exclusively breastfeeding is a healthy, natural way for women to nourish their newborn. It's good for the mother-infant relationship and cheaper than formula. So why do so few women stick with it? In this two-part series, we want to explain some of the structural and medical reasons why some women use formula and how the importance of breastfeeding may be different depending on where you live. In part one, were asking why so many women use baby formula instead of breast milk. So it starts at the hospital. There are various reasons why women opt against breastfeeding, but a lot of experts say that a woman's experience at the hospital after birth plays a decisive role. For decades, the World Health Organization is pushing hospitals to implement baby-friendly measures to promote breastfeeding at birth. And those first 24 hours are crucial for a baby to learn how to feed directly from the mother, from its mother. Now, most hospitals in the United States and Europe are baby-friendly, but in other parts of the world, that's not always the case. Antonina Maturo, a maternal and child well-being researcher for the African Population and Health Research Center in Nairobi, Kenya, helped conduct a survey in the informal settlement of Nairobi, which a recent UN report called some of the most dense, unsanitary, and insecure slums in the world. Of the new mothers surveyed, only 2% were exclusively breastfeeding their babies and not bottle feeding. That's despite the fact that many of the women Maturo encountered could not afford a regular supply of formula. They were using cow's milk or foods like porridge to feed their babies before the age of 6 months, she said. Maturo said that the lack of breastfeeding in the settlement was due in part to the fact that the women probably didn't learn about breastfeeding at the hospital after giving birth. If it's not a baby-friendly facility at times, health workers offer to take the child and give it formula that sets the precedent, Maturo had said. Now, other times, women were told by doctors that they don't have enough milk. Maturo said a woman's ability to produce breast milk typically depends on demand. Shortly after birth, demand is created by placing the baby on the mother's breasts, which help stimulate milk production. But you find that the narrative is usually, oh, I do not have enough milk. So the solution is to look for other options, and formula is usually the fastest option, said Maturo. It is not due to ignorance, said Maturo, whose staff would work in pediatrics or gynecology, know that breastfeeding is good for the baby. But the structures aren't in place to promote it. And when the workload becomes overwhelming, some doctors and nurses don't take the time to train new mothers if they can offer baby formula instead. Then there is the baby formula industry. In 1981, the World Health Organization, or the World Health Assembly, rather, the decision-making body of the World Health Organization, adopted an international marketing code for breast milk substitutes. The code banned the marketing of formula with an aim to prevent women from being discouraged from breastfeeding. But a World Health Organization report published in February shows that companies have continued to aggressively market products online through methods that didn't exist when the code was adopted, like advertising algorithms tailored to reach new moms and parenting apps. The report said that while breastfeeding rates have largely stagnated in the 4 decades since the code's implementation, formula sales have doubled. So Rafael Perez Escamilla, one of the authors of the World Health Organization report, said that even at baby-friendly hospitals, women did not always receive the support they need to understand how to breastfeed once they got home. Perez Escamilla said there were 2 reasons for that. In most medical nursing schools, students may only receive a couple of hours of breastfeeding training throughout their education. I'm at a great institution, Yale University, and I'm in charge of teaching breastfeeding, a component of the building of medical school students, and it's like 2 hours, Perez Escamilla had said. Without sufficient hands-on training, healthcare providers lack the skills to teach women how to nurse their own babies, and that work is often passed on to breastfeeding peer counselors, or lactation consultants, Perez Escamilla had said. All right, so we'll have to see where else we go here. Okay. So we'll see where that is. Okay, I think that's it for us today. So tomorrow's another day. Not quite sure if I know who's on for tomorrow. Oh, tomorrow's Tuesday. So with Tuesday, we're going to be speaking to Jeff Swartz and Brendan Beery. So that's always a pleasure. And I guess that's the story there. So thank you again for being with us today. Always a pleasure. And I'll go back to our studio screen. And I just wish you a good day. And where are we here? Okay, that's not what we needed here. One moment. Okay, I think I'll get back to the studio. And here we are. So I want to wish you just a great day. Thank you for being with us. And hopefully you'll join us tomorrow when Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz, both CWMU, Cooley College professors, will be talking to us. So all the best. Take care and goodbye.